USA, sober since December 22nd, 1987. Our timekeeper, who today is Rob, will give you a 2-minute warning. Take it away, Micah.
All right, thank you very much. It is great to be with you all. My name is Micah. I am an alcoholic, and I'm here today because I don't want to drink. And I see the timer in the upper corner. Great. Keep me honest. I need it. I'm really delighted to be with y'all today. My sponsor a little while ago recommended this meeting to me, and man, I love the cacophony of voices, welcoming the newcomers who with their day counts. That is just what a delight. And I've been on this meeting a handful of times. I travel a lot, so it's great to be able to take it with me, and I was really grateful that I was asked to speak today. Like I do every time before I speak, I spent a moment with my higher power, asking that my higher power speak through me and to not embellish my story and just kind of lay it out. I'm a garden variety drunk, and I've been fortunate. I really recognize it as fortunate to get sober at a relatively young age. I came into the program when I was 19, and from the grace of my higher power, I haven't had the need to pick up since then. How old am I? I'm 58 now, I think. 57, 58, something like that. I lost track. But 38 years of sobriety, thanks to you all and people like you all. There's a lot of the story that you've probably heard from others in my story. I got a friend that says, when you tell me you're an alcoholic, I know 98% of what I need to know about you. And I feel that way too. But I'll highlight some of the particulars. And if you haven't been in it, it seems like an odd thing to say, but I grew up in a very loving family and also a very abusive family, and two things can be true at once. My parents wanted the best for me. They were very education oriented. They were both professionals and in the medical field. I had a serious illness as a kid, and my parents saw to it that I had the best care. And also, at the same time, there was a lot of abuse in my family. I only mention that, like, I have taken full responsibility for my life. I don't blame my parents for my alcoholism, or I should say I no longer blame my parents for my alcoholism. Took me a little while to get over that. But I've taken accountability and responsibility for my life. My parents didn't make me an alcoholic. But it is a data point, and I don't dwell on it anymore, but that is a contributing factor, let's say. But I really do like to highlight that I know that there are people who deal with neglect and different kinds of abuse, and that was not my story. I grew up in a family where health and education and all of the things like that were really stressed. And interestingly, when I was 10 years old, my father sought help for himself to deal with his ism. And that really changed the dynamic of our family. But I was 10, my brother was 8, my sister was 7, and a lot of damage had already been done. I believe I'm predisposed to alcoholism. I can look back and see some, sort of compulsive addict-like behaviors at a very young age. I wanted for nothing. I know that's not everybody's story, and yet I coveted other people's things. I was very invested in things. If you had a cool toy, I wanted that toy. At a young age, I might steal that toy. There was no rhyme or reason for it, except to say that maybe that was kind of the beginning indicators of someone who's predisposed to addiction. The allure of alcohol to me was there at a young age. I grew up in a Jewish family, and we'd have this yearly Passover Seder, it's called. If you're not familiar with it, it's a big holiday in the Jewish faith, and you do it at home, and there's a whole big ritual around it, and there's a lot of food and drink, and the adults are actually required as part of that holiday to drink 4 glasses of wine over the course of the evening. And I was really attracted to that. I wanted to get in on that. I was about 10 years old. And the kids would all get like a little tiny thimble sized thing of wine to keep up. And most of my brother and sister and my cousins, most of the people were like, "Oh, wine, this tastes gross." And I was like, "I like this. I want more of this." So little indicators early on. That was 10 years old. My first real drunk was around 12, and that drinking, the way that I drank at 12, really characterized what my drinking would be like for the next 7 years. And I drank as much as I could, as quick as I could. I mixed everything that was available. And I drank until I physically couldn't anymore because I was blacked out and sick. I wet my pants. I got in a fight. I was not a fighter. I didn't know how to fight. I didn't want to fight. But when I got drunk, I started fights and I just got my ass kicked a lot. Oh, sorry. I forgot about the cursing thing. There was no, for me anyway, there was never any sort of, good old days, the glory days. That first drunk was pretty much the same experience that I had just about every time I got drunk. Medical professionals later on told me I had a physical allergy to alcohol, and not just the one we talk about that triggers the craving. I definitely had that, but a small amount of alcohol would start making me puke like right away, and yet I kept telling myself it was going to be different this time. I was going to go slower, I was going to go different, and every time I threw up, I blacked out, I wet my pants, I often got my ass kicked. So I try not to kind of glorify it. I had a lot of good teenage experiences. Very rarely, maybe never, was alcohol involved when there were good teenage experiences. And very short order, I became a regular drinker. I wasn't a daily drinker, but I was hiding bottles in my room at age 13. My parents had a very well-stocked liquor cabinet, and they were almost never drank. And I would water down their alcohol. I would steal bottles, and as far as I know, they never really they never really noticed. That kind of continued. And the thing was, I did really well in school. School came naturally to me. I know it doesn't for everybody, but I found high school to be easy. I applied to 3 colleges. I got into all three, and I picked the one that I wanted. It was a very expensive private engineering school that my grandfather paid my way to. And I don't say that to brag. I just like to highlight that unlike a lot of people I know, like I had it pretty good, and I took it all for granted. I didn't realize it. But thankfully, I'm thankful for it now. The college experience really brought me to my knees. There were whatever guards there might have been, there were no more guards, and I discovered drugs, and I liked that, and it brought me to my knees very quickly. And my first semester in college, I got a 3.3 out of 4, pretty good. And then my second semester, I got a 1.8. I failed a couple of classes. I got D's in a couple of classes. I had to repeat. And my dad, I thank him now. I certainly didn't at the time. I'm thankful for this now. He said, "I'm not going to waste your grandfather's money. If you want to go back to college, you can go to the state school, or you can go get a job, but I'm not going to send you to this expensive private school when you're, getting these kind of grades." And I thought he didn't understand, and he was giving me a hard time, and I'll turn it around. And In the meantime, I had started seeing a therapist at this time in college, and it was the same family therapist that we had gone to when I was 10, and my father sought help for his own ism, and my parents paid for this therapy, and I took it for granted. I would just blow off sessions, and it was clear to me that she was going to charge them for the time if I showed up or not. And I grew up in New York, and I would call her from the payphone in the frat house that I was living in. We had a beer vending machine in that frat house. I didn't like beer, but I would often drink it. And I would call her, and I would complain, and people didn't understand me. My girlfriends, my professors, my parents, nobody. I was a victim in everything. And we would have these conversations, and she would listen. And I bring all this up because there was this one session I was in person. I was back in New York because it was a holiday break, and I was kind of saying the same old BS to her. And she said, "Did you ever think that the root cause of all these problems might be your alcohol and drug use?" And at this point, lots of people had said something to me about my use of alcohol and drugs. I'd almost died one time, choking on my own vomit, and my brother was very freaked out, and he wanted me to get help. And I never took it seriously. I didn't believe them. For certain people who brought it to my attention, I kind of surgically removed them from my life. I didn't want to hear that. But for some reason, I now recognize as, grace from my higher power. I heard my therapist that day, and I took a long breath, and I said, "You maybe, I don't know, but maybe that is the problem." Now, it turned out that she was the lead alcoholism and substance abuse counselor for the New York City Postal Service. So she knew a little something about what she was talking about. I didn't know this at the time, but she later on, when I got sober, every year I would meet her for lunch. I would take her out to lunch to, kind of thank her for getting the ball rolling on my sobriety. And she told me about this. And, she said that she knew for a long time that I was an alcoholic, but it was never going to stick unless I knew that I was an alcoholic, unless it came from me. So when the time was right, when she felt the time was right, she said that. And I went to my first meeting in a hospital basement in Long Island, New York. Actually, the same hospital my daughter was born at would be born at years later. And kind of a miracle happened. I didn't have the words for it at the time, but it was the first time that I identified with someone. The speaker at this meeting was probably younger than I am now, but I was like, who is this? Who is this old guy that's going to get up here and talk about stuff? But something happened. He was talking about the impact that alcohol had on his life, his alcoholism. He was talking about losing his job and his house and his wife. I was 19 years old. I couldn't relate directly to any of that, but it was like he was telling my story in a way. Like, I identified with him without having that word yet. He really got my attention, and all of the effects of alcohol and all of the feelings and all of the repeating the same thing and expecting a different result, I could relate to all of that. And I really felt like maybe for the first time in my life that these were my people. I recognize how fortunate I am in that at that first meeting, I said, "This is it. Like, I belong. I'm an alcoholic." I said it out loud. From there, as my first sponsor used to say, I was 51% willing and 49% resistant. And my first sponsor used to say that was enough, but it wasn't going to last forever. It wasn't going to be enough forever. But my the other miracle that happened when I went back to college, I kept hearing at meetings that you ought to get a sponsor. I had no idea what that really was. But I was desperate enough that I got a sponsor like pretty much right away. And that was kind of the second miracle, because if I had known what I was in for, I doubt I would have done that. And I fought with my sponsor. I was always trying to bait him. I was always trying to get into weighty philosophical conversations. I was in college after all. And he just wouldn't have it. And he was never mean. That wasn't his way. He was never yelly. Lots of people were. He just said, if you want what I have, do what I do. And if not, that's okay. There's a lot of other people out there that can, maybe be your sponsor. But if you want what I have, do what I do. And kind of, in spite of myself, I started to get better. And I feel like I made every mistake along the way, short of picking up. If you don't pick up, if you just don't pick up, you got a shot at another day. And, I didn't know how to live. I was in an apartment for the first time in my life at age 19 or 20, and it was a wreck. And when it was time to leave that apartment, I just abandoned it. I just started over, and I left a big mess for the landlady. And she was not like a big company or something. She was an individual, single lady who was had this apartment that she rented out. And years later, with my 2-year-old daughter in tow, I drove 8 hours, and I got to make an amend to this landlady. And she was it could have I had no idea how it was going to go. It turned out that she was very happy that I made that amend, but I would have made it either way. I had the backdrop of the program at that point to tell me that, to stay out of the results business. The important thing is that I went and made the amend. I did the steps in order. I got very stuck on the third step. I came in with an act of resentment against the God that I grew up with. And my sponsor told me I got to get a bigger God. And eventually I found a relationship with a higher power. I came to the conclusion in sobriety, both that I am an atheist and that I have a very strong connection with a higher power. And always happy to talk to anybody if you want on that topic. But there's no conflict in me. It seems like that maybe wouldn't work, but I have no inner turmoil about that. I read, pray, and meditate every single day. And I can't really tell you in a lot of detail what or who I'm praying to, but it doesn't matter. The program gave me the gift of being okay with not knowing. I don't need to know every little thing. And I know I'm coming up on time. I just want to share, one experience, and that is just last week at a meeting, a men's meeting that I go to every week that I've been going to for a long time. I thought I smelled alcohol on one of the guys' breath. And I had this whole inner turmoil that probably lasted all of 3 seconds, but it felt like an
2 minutes, Micah.
eternity. Thank you, I got it. It felt like an eternity. I started second guessing myself. You probably didn't smell alcohol, or you shouldn't say anything. Now's not the time. Maybe you'll call him later. What if you're wrong? You're gonna look like an ass, and he's gonna be mad at you. And that is entirely unacceptable. I am the people pleaserist of people pleasers, and I cannot have people being upset with me. All that went through my head in a flash. But the program gave me, among other things, it gave me a voice. I was the kind of guy that would hang back and listen and judge and assess. And I was always looking for danger signals. And I always concluded that any situation I was in was dangerous. But the program gave me a voice. And this meeting, this men's meeting, is explicitly a feedback meeting. We interfere in each other's lives and hold each other accountable. Not all meetings are like that. And that's 100% fine. But after this, 3 seconds of inner turmoil, I said, hey, I think I smell alcohol. If I'm wrong, I'll come to you on bended knee. And this person said, you're right, I'm drunk. And we went from there. And, I put my head on my pillow that night, and I didn't have a second thought like, oh, I should have said something. What if this guy ends up dead? I didn't have any of those thoughts because I said something. Now I have no control. He may still end up dead. I hope not. Unfortunately, I've seen a lot of that in the intervening 38 years, but I may have planted a seed. I may have been the only big book that that guy saw that day. And so that's the big hope takeaway for me is AA gave me a voice. I can be of service today. And my life is full of the program. I orient my life around recovery, not the other way around. So thank you very much. It's a treat to be with you all.
Thank you so much, Micah.